sometimes I say, you know, if the heavens declare the glory of God, you know, you have this like majestic, massive, awe-inspiring heavens. I think the vineyard is the declares the intimacy, the tenderness of the Father.
Welcome to Formation Conversations, a podcast of the Spiritual Formation Society of Arizona. We're having an ongoing conversation with friends about what it means to be formed into the image of Christ. Thank you for joining us.
Welcome back, friends, to the podcast of the Spiritual Formation Society of Arizona. We're calling our podcast Formation Conversations. Gray and I get together with people that we're interested in having a conversation with, and we think you'll be interested in the conversation as well. At least that's what we hope, right, Gray?
Absolutely. So good to be with you as always, Ted. My name is Gray, and I'm a pastor at Ascension Church of Phoenix, which we planted 8 years ago, and excited to be here talking to you, Ted, and maybe you can introduce our guest, Susie, as well.
Yeah, so our conversation today is with Susie Lips, and I got to know Susie a few weeks ago. A mutual friend thought, I think you guys should really talk and meet because there's some connections maybe in the things that we're up to. And so I enjoyed that conversation so much. I thought, maybe this would be a conversation to share with others too. So welcome, Susie.
Thank you so much. It's good to be here. Good to meet you, Gray. And Todd, good to see you again. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, this one's going to be a good one. It's really cool what you do, Susie. So maybe you could tell us just briefly what it is that you are doing and what you represent kind of today as we come into the conversation.
Absolutely. Well, the fact that you call this conversation, it just like dovetails right into what I do, because I run a little company called Conversations in the Vineyard. So, you know, we're having this conversation online right now, but what I do is I take teams into a vineyard and we talk about what's happening in the vineyard right at that moment. And we draw the metaphors out of the vineyard for life and leadership flourishing. So sustainable flourishing is kind of the goal here, is to understand what we can learn from the vines to grow in a sustainable way, to lead in a sustainable way. And let me tell you, there's a lot there. And we do this seasonally. So, you know, you can't get it all in one season. So there you go.
All right. Well, thanks, Susie. I look forward to jumping into all that. I mean, just what you shared right there, I thought, I have this question and that question. So before we jump into our full conversation, though, it is our tradition to have a little snack or something to drink or whatever it is. So what do we got today?
Well, I'll dive in first. I think we have Henry Weinhardt's root beer today. This might be a podcast with beer and wine on it. That's a little foreshadowing for you, but this is root beer. This is a leftover in our church fridge from Father's Day, that we have root beer floats, as many churches do. And, you know, it's great having leftovers at a church. That's kind of my foray into today's conversation. You know, at a church, there's always Goldfish crackers. There's always, veggie sticks, and there's usually something like there's wine too, right? There's things left over, and you know, from time to time I might partake of some of that. Some people object to that. I'm like, well, you look at the Old Testament, you see the priests of God, they got to eat some of the sacrificial meat, so every now and then I'll grab some Goldfish crackers from the closet. But today it's Henry Weinhardt's root beer.
I too am enjoying this root beer, I must say. But what I brought as my snack is chips and guac. So there's a part of me that thinks I can just say chips and guac and enough said, right? I mean, no. That is an appropriate snack, I think, any time of the day, really. Mm. I mean, a midnight snack. I mean, why not for breakfast? With like chilaquiles, like you were saying earlier. We had a previous conversation with Susie, but anyway. And of course, all the way through lunch, afternoon, dinner. So chips and guac, that's what I've got.
chips and guac appropriate at any time of day, 100%. I'm on board with that. So I am, you know, consonant with what you were talking about, Gray. This is actually leftovers for me. I just ran a Conversations in the Vineyard retreat the last couple of days, and we generally take some charcuterie into the vineyard. And so I'll just, you know, kind of give you a little glimpse there. I've got some leftover cheese and meats and some veggies. And of course, from the vineyard, a little glass of rosé of Pinot Noir. It's interesting. This is a new wine for me. It's called Esthete. I don't know. Did I say that correctly? Maybe. But so it's a new wine for me, and I'm enjoying it. But it is also leftover. We opened it, didn't finish it. So leftover wine, leftover charcuterie. It's pretty pretty tasty. I say it goes well together.
Right. Sounds amazing.
Well, we're going to take a break here and enjoy the beverages and snacks that we brought. And we will be back in a few minutes.
Hey friends, we are back. It's talking with Susie. And before we started recording, I cut Susie off. She was starting to tell us her story. I was like, you gotta share this on the podcast. So I want to tee you up again to tell us, you said you were born in Phoenix. That's what you told us, which is where we're coming from today, obviously. And then you said you moved from there. Take the story from there, Susie. Tell us kind of that point to where you are now in an overview fashion.
Awesome. Yeah. So I was born in Phoenix. When I was 3 months old, my parents, who had become missionaries, put me in a little inflatable bathtub. I think they said it was yellow. So I'm imagining a little yellow inflatable bathtub. This is the days before car seats, right? In the back of the car, this little three-month-old baby girl, and they drove from Phoenix all the way down through Mexico to Honduras, where I lived the first 7 years of my life. That was home for me. And my parents were actually Bible translators. And so they were very intent on learning this minority language. I mean, minority, when I say minority, I mean, there were only 400 speakers of this language. So a very small language, very remote. Anyway, that's where I started my life. So, you know, if we are talking about like, how did I get to what I'm doing today with Conversations in the Vineyard? The only thing I can, you know, sort of connect the dots is I started playing in the dirt, and I'm still playing in the dirt. You know, I learned to walk in the dirt, on the dirt paths, and I'm still walking on the dirt in the vineyard. But really in between there was a lot of life lived. And I moved to Guatemala City when I was 8. My parents moved from this small village into a more urban area. So I spent the rest of my growing up years in Guatemala. And that really feels more like home to me because those are my more formative years. Those are the ones that I remember. And then I went to college back in Arizona. So I'm a Sun Devil. Yeah, I ended up, go Devils. And I, well, on some level, that's where I met my husband. He was my roommate's boyfriend. We can unpack that, but that might require some more wine. Nothing, you know, there was some space in between there, but anyway, Bob and I have been married now 45 years. And we have 3 adult children, 4 grandchildren. But soon after we got married, and I'll just briefly tell you this story, we were working actually in a church in Tempe. He was the business manager, or I don't forget what his title was, but he was a CPA. So he was doing all the numbers things. I was teaching school. And we were called in those days, God just tapped us to also join the Bible translation movement. They had a need for a CPA in Huntington Beach. And we thought, wow, that's an okay place to do ministry. So we moved to Huntington Beach with Wycliffe back in the day, and we served with Wycliffe for 23 years in different roles over the years. We moved from Huntington Beach to Papua New Guinea, more dirt. You kind of get the theme here. And moved to Papua New Guinea, then back to Dallas, where we spent some time, and then Orlando, where we finished up our time with Wycliffe. So always in sort of an administrative role. And then God called us out and into industry, and we moved to San Francisco. And that was in 2004-ish. And we have been in this Bay Area ever since. We left San Francisco full-time in 2013. I can tell more of that story as the time goes on here. But we've been in Sonoma County now since 2013. And yeah, the way Conversations in the Vineyard got started, you know, it's as is true with so many deep things, they are born out of difficulty, right? Adversity. And that's exactly what happened here. We were living happily in San Francisco, had a big community there, lots of friends, and lovely place to live. And we had a little weekend home up here in wine country. Well, things fell apart for my husband and his job. And I like to say that God banished us to wine country. He sent us away from our community, the place that we had put down our roots, people that we loved, and sent us to wine country where we knew nobody. And we were here in a place that we didn't want to be. We were probably the only people in Healdsburg that did not want to be here. And it was in that season that as I'm driving around wine country, sort of licking my wounds and feeling sorry for myself, all the things that I had lost, and it was a big loss, can name that, I began to just become attentive to the rhythms of the vineyard. Now, I'm a city girl, right? I lived in Guatemala City. I mean, I did start out in the dirt in Honduras, fair. But I never really learned how to grow anything. When I was at boarding school, I will say this, in first grade, they gave me radish seeds to plant. Who gives a first grader radish seeds? First of all, they didn't take, which was fine. Anyway, I in that season that we just moved to Healdsburg, and I'm driving around observing, being attentive to whatever God has for us, licking my wounds, God directed me to plant a garden. And being a city girl, I basically laughed out loud with God. I said, God, you know, hang on, wait, you're supposed to know me. And that doesn't feel much like knowing, you know, don't you know? I don't actually have houseplants, God, because I can't keep things alive. So I ended up, I ended up planting a garden, and it took a couple of years, you know, these seasons of life where we slow down and we become attentive are often fairly long. And I planted a garden, and sure enough, things grew, and we ate tomatoes and kale, and I was surprised and all that. And I began to, again, see the cyclical nature of these seasons. So long story short, the penny dropped for me when I was sitting at a winery drinking a glass of Zinfandel that was made from the grapes that were on the hill right in front of me, Lily Hill. I'm drinking Zinfandel from the Lily Hill grapes, and Lily Hill vines were 100 years old. So now I began to wonder, what could the vines teach us about flourishing over the long haul? And they're still producing good fruit right? I'm drinking it. This is proof that what they're producing is still good fruit. So that's where my journey started in terms of developing some of these metaphors and teachings really around the vineyard and having these conversations.
Wow. Yeah. I feel like I want to know, like, so when you, you know, when you lead people or do a teaching, what does that look like? And, but then I think what I want to know even more is like, what are some of these things, you know, like in thinking about that 100 years and the wisdom and what is it the vine can say that over the long haul, there's still beauty and there's fruit produced. How do you answer that? Can you say that in a simple way or?
Yeah, that's a good question. A couple of things come to mind. First of all, I was with a gentleman who's a winemaker. He's fourth generation in this area. His great, whatever that was, grandmother started planting grapes back in the day. And he is renowned in this area for having this remarkable vineyard that also has 125-year-old vines. And he took me to this vineyard one day, and I'm looking at these old vines. And I said to him, Dave, I said, if there was one thing that you could identify that has kept these vines healthy and flourishing over this 125 years, what would that be? And he stopped and he thought for a while, and I'm expecting him to say something like, you know, we take care of the soil or we, you know, whatever, we do the watering properly or whatever. It's actually a dry farmed vineyard, so there's no water there at all. But he said this, and I'll never forget it. He said, you know what it is? He said, it's the crew, it's the vineyard crew that takes care of this vineyard over their lifetime. They love these vines. They know each one of them. And then their children come along and take care of it for the next stretch. And then their children, you see where I'm going with this? And I thought, wow, you know, that's remarkable. It's the love of the gardener, right? It's the love of the farmer for each of these vines that allows them to sustainably flourish over time.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, so sustainability, you know, when we talk about sustainable flourishing as humans, you know, our sustainable flourishing is actually much shorter than this vineyard, right? Than these vines. But there's a principle there. So these are the kinds of principles that we can talk about when we're in a vineyard. And the love of the vine is an important thing. As a leader, you know, we look to the Father, the gardener, John 15. We can unpack that a little bit. But we look to the Father as a model and Jesus as a model, infused with the Holy Spirit. We are. How do we care well for our people, you know, our context? And so there's a lot that we can unpack in something like that. I have 40 metaphors that I use pick and choose with teams that are seasonally based. Some of them are sort of an overarching metaphor, like terroir is an overarching metaphor. This is an overarching metaphor, you know, just this love for the vineyard. But they're you know, seasonally based. I've got 40 different metaphors that we can use.
We're going to have you name all 40 of them. No, I'm just kidding.
Let's see.
We should just go to John 15 for a minute. I mean, because actually I was reading John 15 earlier today, not in preparation for this conversation, actually, just because it was nearby the passage that I'm preparing to preach this week. Mm-hmm. And I was just struck by it again. It's just such a beautiful passage. If you're not familiar with it, or if you need a refresher, it's where Jesus talks about being the true vine, right? And mm-hmm. and that we abide in him. So you're coming from a Christian background and a Bible translating background, mm-hmm. and you're doing this business now too, where you're having these conversations in the vineyard with people, I'm guessing, of all different stripes. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ted and I are very much on the integrationist kind of spectrum of things, meaning that we believe all truth is God's truth, right? Wherever it's found in the world. How do you think about faith in these contexts, and what do you think your role is in kind of leading people in different contexts? Is it a spiritual endeavor for you? Like, how does that connect?
Yeah, I'm all truth is God's truth. And one of the big books from our Celtic brothers and sisters is nature, right? The big book that God has given us to understand God. So much of God is woven through nature in ways that we can understand. You know, Jesus says, look at the birds of the air. I don't think Jesus meant for all of us to become ornithologists, right? That wasn't the point. The point is, look, there's something about the way birds are cared for and the dependence on the Father to feed them. There's something about that that we can learn from. I think there's so much in nature that we can learn from. When I'm talking to people who are of this particular Christian faith that I share, it's very easy to kind of bring these things out. When I'm talking to people of other spiritualities, or perhaps they identify as no faith at all, one of the things that everybody agrees on is that nature can teach us. So, of course, it's a no-brainer to sort of introduce them to these beautiful truths that are actually embedded in creation. And I like to think that the Holy Spirit is just enjoying these conversations and infusing the environment, the context that we're in, with the truth of the Spirit in special ways. Yeah. John 15. Let's talk about it. I'm going to just find it here on my computer so I can read it properly for you. But let's just go there. John 15, verses 1 through 4 says, I am the true vine and my Father is the gardener. I'm reading from the NIV right now. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes. There's a little note here that says also means he cleans. Every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will be even more fruitful. I want to just stop right there. I think this is an unfortunate English translation of what Jesus was trying to say. Is it okay to keep going now?
Yes, we're all here.
Okay. Look, Jesus has just been in Passover with his disciples, right? He's been talking with them, John 14, this whole discourse. I'm going to prepare a place for you. This is a love discourse, right? And Jesus says, I am the true vine. Wow, we can unpack that all day. You know, the disciples, they're thinking lots of things. What does that mean about the true vine? And I'll come back to that if we have time. But I am the true vine. My Father is the gardener. So far, so good. But then all of a sudden, in the middle of this loving communication, he cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit. Well, if you go back to the original Greek, and we don't have this in Aramaic, unfortunately, but when we go back to the original Greek, that those words right there, he cuts off is the Greek word airo. Now, you guys are probably better Greek scholars than me. This is one little thing that I know. I just know something about viticulture. Airo in Greek means to lift up. Take up your cross and follow me. Airo your cross and follow me. Pick it up, lift it up. I'm not even sure why the translators thought that a good translation there would be to cut. Not with that word. And if you think about viticulture, from a viticultural standpoint, what is Passover? Spring, right? If you're in a spring vineyard, you know, Jesus is in a spring vineyard. So let's get the context. It's nighttime. It's after Passover. It might be full moon because that was Passover. They've got torches. Jesus is in a spring vineyard. There's no fruit. There's no fruit at all. Mm. It's just some unruly leaves coming off the vine, maybe. You know, there might be some evidence of like little inflorescences or the little things that eventually do become fruit, but there's no fruit on the vine. It's just leaves. And by the way, in the ancient Near East, vines grew on the ground. They did not grow on trellises like we have fancy trellises today. So the vine is growing on the ground. You can find pictures of this online. It's really fascinating. And I imagine that Jesus is saying about this vine, my father is the gardener. Look, there's no cutting happening in spring. All the cutting, I mean, happens, but it's not happening at this moment. Why would the gardener be cutting right now? Is just a totally inappropriate translation. So I just imagine what Jesus was trying to say was the gardener lifts up the branches that are not bearing fruit. Mm-hmm. Changes everything, doesn't it? It's like Jesus saying, the gardener sees you. You're dragging on the ground. Mm-hmm. And what you need is a little air under your leaves. You know, you need to get up off the ground so that you can bear fruit.
So you just said something that when I was in seminary years ago now, one of our professors walked us through Airo. And so totally get what you're saying with that. And it is so important to have that understanding. But something you just said struck me maybe even a little differently is that in this season, those vines wouldn't have been bearing fruit anyway. So to say that the gardener is lifting up or encouraging, helping a vine that's not bearing fruit is not a judgment saying, oh, it's not bearing fruit, as much as it is that when it's in this season, it needs this encouragement and the lifting up. Is that how you're understanding it?
Absolutely, Ted. I mean, this, to me, it just gives me chills thinking about the love of the gardener, the love of the father for the trailing branch, you know, that needs a little encouragement, that needs something to be fruitful, to eventually bear the fruit. You know, honestly, in the spring, these little branches are very pliable. They're green. You know, they're very moldable. Later on, as the fruit develops and gets heavier, they lignify. They get brown and hard. But if they're brown and hard on the ground, it's a little harder to lift them up. So, you know, a new spring little shoot that needs to be lifted up. It's just, to me, it's a tender moment. It's not a cutting moment at all. Sometimes I say, you know, if the heavens declare the glory of God, you know, you have this like majestic, massive, awe-inspiring heavens. I think the vineyard declares the intimacy, the tenderness of the Father. But we miss it because we've been preaching it wrong. We've been reading it wrong. And we start talking about how the Father is punishing us for not having fruit. And it's not even the season for fruitfulness, you know? It's just all wrong. So spring vineyard, grapes on the ground, or vines on the ground, Oh, you got the translation thing going on. And then, of course, the next thing is, and the vines that are that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will be even more fruitful. Well, good on the translators for saying this word can also mean he cleans. Well, why didn't you use that word? Because the whole discourse keeps going. The very next verse is, you are already clean. It's like, where did that come from? If there's not a flow there. So this katharo, which comes from the word, the Greek word, where we get the word catharsis, you know, is sort of this ceremonial cleansing. And that's the word that they chose to translate prune. Well, again, this word doesn't show up anywhere else in the New Testament. So they just don't know what to do with it. They think, oh, we're in a vineyard. We're just going to call it prunes. No, stick with a real understanding of what this is, the root word. It's a cleansing. It's a ritual cleansing. Now imagine this vine trailing on the ground. What happens? It gets dirty. And when leaves are dirty, they cannot do the job of photosynthesis. It's pretty simple. So Jesus picks up this vine, brushes it off. Look, hey, you're a little dirty. I'm going to help you out here. I'm going to clean you up. And by the way, guys, you're already clean because I of the word that I've spoken to you. Now it makes sense.
I love how you're bringing that tenderness into it. And I'm guessing that that's kind of the approach you're wanting to do as well when you bring leaders in, right? Just to kind of tenderly help them. Can you speak a little bit about who is coming in? What do they need? Like if you were to kind of summarize, like someone's coming to you, like who is that person kind of first of all? And then what's the kind of desired transformation that you would hope or pray or, you know, believe that God would do through kind of some of the conversations that you're having?
Yeah, it's a great question. I just, people are looking for different things when they come to me. Sometimes they're just looking to drink wine. That's, you know, it's like, oh, we have a, you know, outside in the vineyard. Yay. What they don't realize is they're going to get a whole lot more than that. But usually people are coming because their souls are weary and they need some kind of refreshment. And they think maybe this will be a refreshing time, a refreshing topic. And they're absolutely right. You know, burnout is real, you know, and pastors are the worst at it. Can I just call that out? Sorry, Gray. But, you know, pastors burn out regularly because they just don't understand that there's a rhythm to life. There's a cycle. There are seasons. And I had a young pastor one time come, and he's kind of young pastor, so he's not even in it very long, but he's already struggling. He's a little tired. He's burned out, right? And I use some visuals that have pictures of grapes and different things that illustrate what I'm talking about. And he came to me in a winter season. So the vineyard was very stark, which is a really great time, actually, to have these conversations, because we often come during those stark, lonely, isolated seasons to try to figure out what's going on in our life. So we're in the vineyard looking at vines that have nothing on them, actually. No leaves, no fruit, nothing. They're just sticks in the ground. And we're talking about the hard things in the winter season. And he picked up a picture that had a whole big, beautiful bunch of fruit. And he showed it to the group, all pastors. And he pointed at it and he says, but I want to be here all the time. Mm-hmm. And I just let it sit there for a minute. And as soon as the words escaped his mouth, everybody around the table was like, oh, that's not possible. It's just not possible. Mm. We are not built to have that kind of fruit hanging on our branch 24/7. There are cycles, there are seasons, there are rhythms. Mm-hmm. And I think that part of what God has embedded in nature is meant to teach us this. My goodness, God creates the world and then rests. Right? And we ignore that at our peril, right? So one of the things that I try to help leaders and people understand is that these seasons are predictable. They come around regularly. We have macro seasons in life, you know, like maybe you're in a summer season, macro on your life. But, you know, we have even daily micro seasons or seasons that might sort of span a decade or, you know, you get the point. But the point is that these seasons inform us on how we can show up in the world during that season. The gentleness with which we can understand other people's seasons. How many times on your team have you thought, that person's just lagging, you know, the rest of us are, you know, moving forward. It might be an opportunity to investigate whether that person is actually in an inner season of winter, for example. Mm. How can we be generous and gentle with our team, understanding these rhythms? Oh, and by the way, grapes that have juice in them only hang on the vine for maybe 4 weeks out of the year, maybe six. Mm. That's not very long in the grand scheme of things. And I think God's okay with that.
Wow. As I hear you share all that, Susie, I just think, I was thinking about it in a business context, but I mean, in the life of the church and among pastors and leaders, any kind of ministry, spiritual directors, someone doing Bible translation, whatever it might be, gosh, that feels like it's transformative to really have that sort of mindset, understanding, perspective, because then when my brother or sister is in a season where things aren't going so well, I would say, what, how can we lift you up? You know, is there some cleansing that needs to happen? How do we help you where you are right now? And gosh, this 24/7 productivity sort of thing, it's just no wonder we're dying. No wonder we're struggling so significantly.
And even from a church leadership perspective, and you think about the church calendar or something like that, I mean, and we try to follow that here, it's helpful to people, right, to go into Lent, season of repentance and, you know, and acknowledgement of hardship and wilderness, you know, for 40 days. And then now, you know, I'm speaking to our congregation about, hey, some energetic things we want to do kind of in the next couple of months. It's Pentecost. You know, it's the church is growing, right? The Holy Spirit's breathed on us. Yeah. There's fire over our heads. You know, we've got a mission in this neighborhood. We got stuff to do, you know, and so, and not everybody, of course, follows that. Things happen individually in people's lives, but it almost, it's a way to model it almost on a macro scale to talk about the church calendar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an excellent point. And again, I feel like this is something that we, as people of faith, probably need to do a better job of modeling, of living out. And the church calendar is a good example of how that works. One of the things that's true, you know, so I talk about rest a lot. Well, you know, some people are like, well, I need to rest a lot. Okay. And they use it as an excuse for laziness, right? That's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about the kind of rest that is restorative. It's wholehearted. David White, in his book, Crossing the Unknown Sea, I don't know if you know this book, but he's a poet, and this is his book that kind of is the book that integrates sort of faith and work. But he says the antidote to exhaustion is not rest. It's wholeheartedness. So sometimes, and I think he uses that language because we get a different, we don't understand rest very well. lots of different ways to rest. So I'm just going to, you know, we're not going to go into all of them, but this wholehearted piece is very important. There was a study done recently, actually, of pastors. Maybe you read it, but it was a study of pastors who have had longevity, right? Sustainable flourishing over the long haul. And pastors who had burned out and left over a shorter period of time. The common denominator for the pastors who had had some longevity in their ministry, they all had a hobby. And not a hobby that was just a small hobby, but they all had something that they did with a fair degree of regularity that when they did it, they lost track of time. They were so wholeheartedly involved in this change of rhythm. And that's restorative. That's rejuvenating. And that's why, you know, God resting after doing all this creating, he sort of just took a pause. That's a different rhythm, right? The other reason that we take Sabbath, or that Sabbath was commanded in the Old Testament, of course, is the Exodus, the freedom from slavery. I actually wrote a Sabbath prayer for people who come to Conversations in the Vineyard that we do if it falls right. But the Sabbath prayer is an invitation to lay down the tools of our labor, you know, and engage a different modality, a different rhythm. And even people who are not people of faith understand this. They're like, yeah, when I need to rest, it's not really always about taking a nap. Sometimes it's about going for a run or, you know, working on my puzzle, you know, or knitting, or, you know, different things, things that sort of really change the rhythm for us. We see this in the Vineyard a lot. I talk about this kind of shift in rhythm. We talk about transformation a lot. There's a lot of transformation. So you ask the question, Gray, what do I hope to see happen? Or what's the transformation? Really, I hope that my personal experience and the content that I bring forward, the embodied experience that they all engage in, because we're literally in a vineyard, that embodied experience and the activities that we do will start them on a journey of discovery of a new framework, a new way of thinking about sustainable flourishing. Yeah.
I feel like what I'm hearing as a bit of a thread from the first thing you shared all the way through looking at John 15 is the ability to let someone take care of you is really critical for sustainability and longevity.
That's well said. Yeah, that's very good.
And that just feels like that's the invitation that Jesus comes to us with is, let me care for you.
Yeah,
I will care for you. Mm. So a lot of the people that will be listening to this podcast are spiritual directors. Mm. And I know you're not a spiritual director, but you have experience with spiritual direction for sure. Is there one thing that you would say, with all this wisdom the Lord is continuing to give you and deepen in you, is there one thing you'd say, I think this would be really helpful for spiritual directors?
Wow. First of all, a high degree of respect for spiritual directors. I honestly could not have made it through some of the seasons of my life recently without the spiritual direction that I've had. So thank you for training. Thank you for doing all that. I just want to shout out to all you spiritual directors out there who are holding space for people to just process and grow. As spiritual directors, you know, as like therapists, you're not really taking in, hopefully, all the pain that people are bringing to you. You're rather being the container for that to happen. And then you offer that up to the Lord, right? And that just becomes your rhythm. And I think that participation in what God is doing in someone's life, it's like what we do as we remain in the vine, right? It's a participation with what God is doing. There's so much more to say, but this idea, remain in me as I remain in you. It's not a one-way street. Jesus doesn't say, I'm going to give you everything and you're going to do nothing. It's an invitation to participate in the life of the vine and the fruitfulness of the vine. We talk a lot about leaves, actually, on the vine. So I think of spiritual directors, I think of leaders as leaves on the vine, not the fruit. Fruit's a nice byproduct, but it's the leaves that stay attached to the vine. It's the branches. They're the ones that are really doing the work of metabolizing the toxins. You think about it, the carbon dioxide that comes into the leaf and it's metabolized, turned into sweetness for the fruit. That is a participatory thing with the vine. You know, the vine sends the water. The leaf does the work of metabolizing and turning things into sugar. The transformation that happens in a leaf is incredible. It's in the light, I think, of the Spirit. You've got the light of the Spirit, the water of the vine in Jesus, and that, and the leaf being like where that meets, and that transformation is like ridiculous. It's radical, and it feeds the fruit. I love, for me, this is a Trinitarian metaphor. The invitation. You've got the gardener, right? You've got the vine where the water is being drawn up from the roots and pushed out to where all this work is being done, the leaves, if you will, and the Spirit as the truth and the light that enters into all of that. And then the fruit is what glorifies the Father. But the fruit's not something that we do as leaves. We get to participate in that project, if you will. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Thank you. I asked for one thing and I feel like that one thing has like 20 all packed in.
Yeah. Yes. Well, more to come.
For those who are listening, this is not a done deal, but Susie and I started talking about the idea of doing a Conversations in the Vineyard retreat for spiritual directors. So, well, I think we're going to keep talking about that. So, keep your ears open and your eyes open, and we'll see what might be coming in the next year or something. That would be exciting. And so one last question, it's kind of a fun one that we will often ask is, what is one thing that you would tell your 25-year-old self? Because I know you're a little older than 25, not much, but you can look back at your 25-year-old self.
Yeah, what would I tell my 25-year-old self? By the time I was 25, I had already had 3 kids. So I was in a very busy stage of life. So my 25-year-old self was that, you know, that's like when I started therapy, right? Like, what do I do with 3 kids under 3? This is like ridiculous. So what would I tell my 25-year-old self from this perspective? I would just say, it's a season. More seasons will come. Enjoy this season. You know, and people who are older than me probably tried to tell me that, but I didn't have a good metaphor for it to look at. I just didn't have that organic metaphor to think about how this would evolve and mature and come again and go. And, you know, so yeah, for me, just looking back on my 25-year-old self, I would be like, it's a season that, it's like a summer season, super busy, hard work.
Yeah.
Eventually there'll come harvest, you know?
Well, and for all the young parents and especially young moms out there, you could have all the metaphors in the world, and the intensity of that particular season, you know, you're not sleeping a lot, you're not thinking well, you just need people around you to help hold up your arms and, you know, get you to where you can reflect on the season. So
exactly. And you know what? The Father wants to lift up that weary branch.
Yeah.
You know, clean it up. Say, you're good. I love you, you know?
Yeah.
And
so true, though, when you're in the middle of something, it's so hard to see what's going to come next. And, you know, summer is the enemy in Phoenix, right? Which is we're in a strange place, because for most people, I think Jim Gaffigan, even the comedian, has a joke about that. Like, I'm not used to summer being the enemy, he said to Phoenix people one time. But, you know, it's hard when you're in the middle of summer here. It's hard to remember that
it's our winter.
It's our winter.
Yeah. Summer here is our winter.
It's hard to remember. It's like, yeah, it's going to be amazing. You know, you're going to eat outside every night for 6 months, you know, and yet you're not for 6 months. So,
Well, thank you for your time. I know we need to wrap this up, but thank you so much. This has been a wonderful conversation, and it's kind of what I expected and thought it would be like. Thank you so much for your time.
Well, like I said, a real privilege to share with you and your audience. And I'm just so grateful for what you do and all the people that are bearing fruit today because of the hard work that the leaves are doing in your context. So keep up the good work.
Thank you, Susie. If somebody was interested in hearing more about your work, what would they do?
conversationsinthevineyard.com. There it is. conversationsinthevineyard.com. I will make one more comment, because Gray, you mentioned Lent. I have written a series of 40 devotionals around John 15 that are available on my website under Lent Meditations. And if you sign up there, then during Lent, you'll get them to your inbox every day during Lent. And so I've divided up, you know, some things there. You can just see that there on the website. But Lent Meditations, and you can look at that. You can even do it when it's not Lent, but it is, it's a nice journey also during Lent.
So friends, check out that website and that resource. And we're just glad to have you as part of the conversation today. To all our listeners, thank you. You can find out more about our ministries at sfsaz.org. And you can find a spiritual director there. Many people have that question. Where do I find the spiritual director that's been so helpful to Susie and to many of us, right? You can find it at that website. You can also find, you can sign up for a silent retreat or any of the upcoming things that we have on offer. So thank you, friends.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody. See you next time.